We were looking at combinational logic minimization. And the basic idea behind minimization is that if you have two product terms, let us say these, and if the two product terms are, they differ in only one variable, which is complemented in one and not complemented in the other, then you can combine them with a simpler expression. And this variable, which is complemented here, not complemented here, will drop out. And of course, we know this from basic Boolean algebra. And last time we had seen Carnot maps. Carnot maps basically are convenient because they let us visualize the adjacency. So, for example, we have seen that if you have a Carnot map that looks like this, then we know that these two are adjacent because they differ in only one variable. We know that these two are adjacent, and we know that we can combine these four because they are adjacent. And we had also seen last time, yeah, I guess we did, that if you have, okay, last time we had seen that if we have these four, these two are adjacent from the definition of adjacency. And we know that these two are adjacent. So these four can be combined and so on. Okay, how about this? Okay, let me try something. Let me see what you think. What about a term here, these two and these two? Can these four be combined? They cannot be combined, right? We can combine these two, we can combine these two. These two we cannot combine because these two differ in two variables. Both of these two variables. So, these cannot be combined into a group of four. Any questions or comments? So far we have seen minimization for single output functions, and now let us see this for multiple output combinational functions. Now there will be a homework assignment, we will post it later today, so it should be available late sometime today, and we will give you about 6 days or so, so it will be due, today is Tuesday, so it will be due Tuesday next week, and also we will have a quiz coming up sometime soon.
Today is Thursday.
Today is Thursday? Oh, okay. I guess off a little bit. Okay, so in that case, it will be due Thursday, which is a week from today, the homework. So generally, most of the time, the homeworks will be due in a week. And next week, also sometime, we will have a quiz. There was something I wanted to mention.
Now before we go forward,
okay, how many of you have heard about the parity bit? Okay, I guess most of you haven't come across this. This is an interesting idea. So, sometimes when information is sent, along with the information, a parity bit is sent. And so, for example, if you want to send 7 bits, now we are going to talk about the ASCII code. You have seen ASCII code, right? So which is a 7-bit code. And so, and usually things are aligned along the 8-bit boundaries. So you have that 1-bit available. So what can you do with this bit which is available? One possibility is just fill it always with 0. Now one thing that is sometimes done is that you would put a parity bit in there. And sometimes you may want to have, let us say, even parity. And by that, we mean that you always want to have even number of ones in those 8 bits. So the even parity bit here would be 0. So you have 0 number of ones, and of course, 0 is an even number, right? And if you have something that looks like this, then you're okay. Let me pick another one. How about this one? So if you want to have even parity for the whole thing, in other words, if you want to have even number of ones in the whole expression, then you'll put a 1 there. So now you have an even number of ones. So the idea is that when you send a bit, so let's say you, when you send a byte, so now this is a byte. So do you have 8 of them? Yeah. So when you send a byte, and if there's some disturbance along the way, and one of the bits or gets disturbed, it would be nice if you can detect the fact that a bit was flipped. It happens. It could be because of some noise, it could be because of some charged particles. So you always have some charged particles flying around. Maybe they are coming out of the encapsulating material from the chip, and they sometimes strike part of the chip. So if one could get flipped into a 0. Most of the time you don't see it. The reason you don't see it is that there is some built-in scheme that kind of does some correction for this problem. And this is the type of scheme that could be used. So here, if you send this, let us say that you have decided that you will have even parity bit. That means even number of ones. So when you send it at the receiving end, you can check and make sure that you have received an even number of ones. And if you have received an even number of ones, then you know that it is likely that there was no problem. Assumption is that most of the time, if there is a problem, it is going to affect a single bit. That is the assumption. So this parity bit is a rather popular redundancy scheme. So you basically add an extra bit based on other information. So you are actually not adding any additional information to it. So in a way it is redundant. But because of the redundancy, it has this invariancy that it has a certain property. So when you receive it, you know that this property should be satisfied. And similarly, if you want, you can have an odd parity bit. Now, in order to generate an even parity bit, how can you generate a bit? Let's say if I give you 7 bits, and you have to come up with this 8th bit, which is the parity bit. Now, one way you could do it by software, you could count the number of ones and see if you need to generate an extra one, or you can do it in hardware. Either way. And now you can, for example, have something like a odd parity function. Which will generate a 1 if the number of 1s in the input is odd . So you can have an odd parity function looking like this. So here you have an odd parity function, and let's say you have some inputs. Perhaps you have 7 inputs here. So those are the 7 inputs, and here you have the odd parity function. And here is the output. So if the number of ones here is odd, you will generate a 1. So you can choose this to be the 8th bit. So if you take these 7 bits plus this 8th bit, the 8 bits would have an even parity, right? So this way you can call it the odd parity function. So for example, okay, how can we describe the odd parity function? Let's say you have 7 inputs, and the example I had there, you have these, input, output. Now when I say input, sometimes I might call them inputs if I count the lines individually, but if I take them as a collective set of bits, sometimes I will just call it input. So I can call it input, and input could be 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. And in that case, if this is an odd parity function, output is 1 if number of ones here is odd. So what should be the output in this case? So that should be a 0, right? Because the number of ones here is 0, which is an even number. And if you have this, okay. So here you have a parity of these 7 bits is odd. And hence, this would be a 1. And if you will add this 8th bit as you transmit something, the resulting 8 bits would have an even parity. Now this is actually a general concept. So on computer networks, when information is sent in packets, at the end you add some redundant information, which is basically based on whatever real information you want to send, so that it satisfies some property. And then at the receiving end, this property would be checked. There are different schemes. This is one of the schemes. This is, of course, a rather simple scheme. But when you send a large block of information, you have somewhat more a complex scheme. But it is basically the same idea. You will check for some property. And if the property holds, you know that the packet was not corrupted during transmission. Now anyway, one of the questions in the assignment is going to talk about a an odd parity function. So I thought I'll mention this.
What is the difference between odd parity and even parity? In the end, in both kinds of parity functions, there will be an even number of ones in the output.
So basically, here is an odd parity function. Now, if you do this, so this is the definition of the odd parity function. And so I have defined the even parity function, and I'm using the same definition as the book, which is that if you have an odd number of ones here, then this would generate a one. That's the definition of the odd parity function.
Yes.
So odd parity function is a combinational function,
yes.
Right?
But even in the even parity function, which is
but this is the even parity property. So here, so if you have so let's say you want to send 8 bits. So here we have the 7 bits. And so here, what you will do, you will have an odd parity function. So you generate an extra bit. And now, if you when you want to send it, what you will do is so here you have those 7 bits, and here you have those 7, and here you have 1, so now you have an 8 bits. So if you want to have a convention that you are going to look for, so now these 8 bits with even parity property. In other words, you will have an even number of ones here. So we say that these 8 bits, they should satisfy the even parity property in order to generate, ensure that you have an even number of ones here. You have to generate something here, and this thing is defined named to be the odd parity function, because it sees if you have odd number of ones here, and if the you have odd number of ones, then it will generate a one. And of course, that makes the overall parity even. But just to be, we need to be careful about terminology, because occasionally people use people may use the same term to mean something slightly different. So we have to make sure that we all agree on the same definition, especially if it is something that needs to be graded, because we want to make sure everyone knows what answer we are looking for. Questions on this? So this is a combinational function. This is an example of a combinational function. Now, we were talking about minimization. So continuing with minimization now. Now let us consider multiple output function minimization. So you have a function where in the output side you have not just a single output but several outputs, and you want to do a minimization. And so let us first identify the objective. What do you want to minimize? Now this is basically applicable to PLAs, because PLAs are basically multiple output combinational functions. Now in a PLA, as I had mentioned, the basic difference between a PLA and a ROM is that in a PLA,
only a small fraction of all possible product terms are implemented. It turns out that most of the large combinational functions that you will come across, they will actually involve only a small fraction of all possible product terms. So that's why it's better to implement them using a PLA. And that way you save on the size of the array. So generally, the number of product terms available is limited in a PLA. And that is why, that is where the advantage of PLA comes about. So you want to minimize the number of product terms. This is the main objective in minimization. And now here, there are a couple of things you can do. One thing that is rather trivial is that some product terms don't need to be implemented. They are not used in any outputs. And of course, this part is trivial, so there's nothing much to say. Now the other part is the interesting thing. You can combine two product terms. Now, just like we had said earlier, you can combine two min terms. Two product terms can be combined if they have the same output values. And here's something that you have seen before. They differ in only one input variable, and this input variable is complemented in one and not complemented in the other. So you will notice it is basically a simple extension of what we have seen earlier. So you can combine two product terms if the input values differ in one variable, which is complemented in one and complemented in the other, and they should have the same values for all outputs. So this is a generalization of the idea we had seen before. And notice it is best to start with product terms in minterm form. In other words, it is best when you have the full table given, all possible combinations given, and you start at that point. Because what if you have already have some terms combined, then you may not reach the optimal. So you have to, you want to get the optimal result. Now there are some formal algorithms that people have come up with, and you can find formally stated algorithms. But this conceptually is really simple, so we are not going to make this formal, but I will illustrate this with an example. Okay, I should, I need some space. Okay, I think, can I squeeze two tables in there? Okay, let me try. Let me start with it. This is an example. Here is a PLA. And I have these inputs. Inputs are A, B, and C. And let us say outputs. Are D, E, and F. And let us assume this is the PLA given. Now, just to track, I'm going to add a column here so that I can track. This column is actually not necessary, but for the purpose of reference, let me attach a label with each product term. And let's assume this function is specified in this way. Let me go ahead and write all combinations. And this is for alignment. And it is specified in this way. 0 0 0 1 0 1 1 0 1 1 1 1 1 0 1 1 1 1 1 0 1 1 1 1 1 0 1 1 1 and 1 1 1. So here is the table. Okay, so this is given to us. Let me make sure that this is the same thing as what I have here, so that I know what answer I should be looking for. Okay, so this is a PLA that is given to us, and we have to minimize it. Okay, what, and our objective is to minimize the number of product terms. So which product terms can be combined? Two product terms can be combined if they have the same values for all outputs. Can I combine product terms 0 and 1? Well, if you look at the outputs, they don't have the same output, so they cannot be combined, right? Okay, how about, what about these two? Can they be combined? Okay, looking at the outputs, the three outputs are same. And, now the second condition, they differ in only one variable, which is complemented in one and not complemented in the other. So these two satisfy our requirement for combination. So we can combine these two. Okay, any other candidates here that we can combine?
4 and 6.
6 and 4, let's see. 1 1 1, 1 1 1, yeah. And this is only, yeah, so 4 and 6, another candidate. Okay, any more? Okay, so let's go ahead and do the minimization, and let me try to squeeze in a table here. I hope you wouldn't mind. Okay, so let me, okay, after I do the combination, now notice that uh, Is it okay to combine one product term with two different product terms? Sure, you can do that. Well, A plus A is A, so you can always use a term twice. But you don't have to do it. But if it helps, you can. So if I combine 6 and 7, then I will replace both of them. So let me do this way. I can combine 6 and 7, and they are going to be replaced by a new term. Now I can combine 6 and 4, and that will be replaced by a new term. So basically I'm going to replace 4 by another term. But that is not going to decrease the number of product terms, right? If I combine 6 and 4, so that is one product term, and I use that to replace 4, so you still have the same number of product terms. That is not going to help. But if you want, you can do it. So should we do it or not? This is optional. Doesn't help in our minimization.
No.
So okay, so maybe you don't do it. Although it is optional, would be nothing wrong if you did it. But this, of course, we have to do. So let's go ahead and get our revised PLA. And if I write really small,
do you explain one more time why you don't do the 4 and 6?
4 and 6? We could, if you want. So basically, we want to minimize the number of product terms. So if I combine 6 and 7, I replace both of them with a new one, right? So that will reduce the number of product terms by 1. And if I combine, if I also combine 6 and 4, that will result in replacement of both 6 and 4 by a new one. So basically, the net effect would be that I will replace this term 4 by a new term. Because 6 is already gone, so it doesn't make a difference. Because 6 we have already combined with 7. So, if I combine 4 and 5, your result isn't going to be any better. So that's why we don't have to combine 4 and 6. You could if you want to, but it doesn't reduce the number of product terms.
So it's because 4 would be a product term, and then you just are replacing it with another, the same thing, basically, right?
Yeah, basically, if we combine 4 and 6, then we will basically replace this by another one. So that does not result in reducing the number of product terms.
So could it be the same if you did 4 and 6 and just not 7? Would that be okay?
Okay, we could combine 4 and 6, and we could not combine 7. Yeah, that would give us the same effect. So basically, you can reduce one product term, but I don't think you can go any further. So there's a limit to how much you can reduce. So you can reduce by one, and again, the optimal answer is not unique. So you may be able to do it in different ways. So one answer would be then. We haven't done anything here. Okay, and 4 we have kept, right? And 5 and 6 we have replaced. So, 6 and 7 we have replaced by a new one, and that is 1, 1. And this becomes a don't care. And this is 1, 1, 1. So now we have reduced from, oh, and there's another thing we can do. Some product terms don't need to be implemented if they are not doing anything. You want to keep this product term, or should we remove this? That product term is not going anywhere. It's not part of any output, so because they are all zero, so we don't have to implement this. So we have reduced the number of product terms by two. So this, of course, is the trivial thing. And so you can now go ahead and implement the PLA. And let us see how the PLA will look like. Let's see a PLA diagram. Now remember, I don't care in this part, means use neither the complemented variable nor the uncomplemented one. You simply don't have a connection.
So is that the only case where you get rid of it, is when it's all zeros like that?
In the output.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So if a product term, so that means this product term is not part of any of these three outputs. So that's why you don't have to use this. That's true. Only when, and that will happen only when all the outputs are zero. So let me show the PLA. Here is A, and here is a complement of A, and here is a complement of B. This is supposed to be an inverter. And here I have C. Okay, so I have gotten all the input variables, complemented and uncomplemented. And now we can form the product terms. How many product terms do we need? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So we have 6 of them. So first product term happens to be 0, 0, 1, right? 0, 0, 1. So that's the first product term. Any questions so far? And the next one that is 1010. Now watch this carefully in case I make a mistake. 010, so 010, and then 011. 011, and then 100, 100. Then we have 101. 101, and finally we have the 11 don't care. Now how do we implement the don't care? 11. So for don't care we don't put anything in. So it is basically you want this whenever A is 1 and B is 1, and regardless of whatever C is. So we don't need to include C. So this, notice that here we don't have any connection there because we have a don't care. Right? Okay, so now we have gotten the 5 product terms, and now let's go ahead and so this is the AND part, and now let's do the OR part. So we want to form the output D, and D uses all of them except this one, right? Except the second one. E uses all of them except the first one. And F is 1101,
1, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1. That is there. So that's our PLS. These are the outputs. And these are the inputs. And of course, as we have noticed, that these are our six product terms. So these are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 product terms.
So this is an example of the multiple output minimization. And basically what we have done is we have tried to minimize the number of product terms.
So is that fully minimized? That's the best thing to do with this truth table?
I believe, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, unless we see any other possibility here. Now there are actually algorithms which you can follow, which will, so basically you can write that into a program and then the program will run through it and eventually come up with either the optimal, or sometimes the people, sometimes some of these processes, if it is a very large PLA, that absolute minimum, getting absolute minimum can take too long. So sometimes people are happy with near minimal design. But most of the things that people do, they would be really small. So if I ask you to do minimization, you really have to get the optimal minimization. Question?
So in that second table, the last row inside, the third to last row can't be combined? Because of that, the middle
yeah.
input then becomes the complement.
Let's see, which row you are talking about?
The very last row.
Okay, this one?
And the one two above it.
Yeah, that's a good question. Question is, can these two be combined? Yeah, that's a good question. Now notice that answer is no, but you kind of have to think about to see why you cannot do it. And notice that here, when we say 1-1 don't care, that actually stands for 1-1-1 and 1-1-0. So those two are not adjacent to this, so they cannot be combined. So if you think about it, you will find out that you cannot do it. So the only way, only condition where you can do the combination.
So it's probably better just to think of don't care as both.
Yeah, don't care really stands for both.
All right.
Even though in implementing it, we didn't implement it. Because that is how we implement don't cares in this part. Now notice, what would have happened if we had also combined 4 and 6 in this PLA? If we had combined 4 and 6, then we would have gotten a don't care here, right? In product term, 4, which was product term number 4 here, which is 100. So that was this product term here, right? So what would have happened is that if we had combined those two, so this one, instead of it looking like this, we would also not have this. But the size of the PLA would have not changed. And it is really the size of the PLA. Because the PLA, it goes on a chip. So of course you want the PLA to occupy a minimum area on the chip. That's basically the idea. Now let's look at another example. Now we have seen don't cares for the input side. Now sometimes don't cares are specified on the output side. And there, basically the same thing works,
But the interpretation is different. So let's look at another example. Any questions on this? Now let us assume, just let us say what example one. And now let's go to example two. And let me show a PLA. And why don't I just... usually PLAs are quite big. So this is rather small. These are small PLAs. But they are basically big enough for us to illustrate the basic idea. Okay. Now this second PLA is specified in this way. Now what that says is that in this if the input is 0, 1, 1, then output F could be either 0 or 1, and we don't care what it turns out to be. Now exactly the same rules apply. We apply exactly the same rules. And okay, here what kind of things can be combined?
Can we just
6 and 7?
3 and 7. 4, 6 and
7. Okay. 4, 5, 6 and 7?
Yeah.
Okay, so 4, 5, 6 and 7. Or you are saying that we can combine all 4. We can actually combine all 4. As you can see, I combine 4, 5, and that is going to give me 1, 0, don't care. And I combine 6 and 7, that is going to give me 1, 1, don't care. So they differ in only one variable, which is complemented and uncomplemented, and I can combine them again. So I can combine all of these 4 into 1, right? So I can combine all these 4 into 1. Now there are some others, right? And let's see, what was the other one that we were thinking about?
3
about 3 and 7. And 7. Should we do that? Combine 3 and 7? Now, we are going to replace 4, 5, 6, and 7 by 1. And then I can combine 3 and 7, and that means I can replace 3 by another 1, which doesn't do anything really. So that we can do it if we want to, but it's not necessary. So maybe let's go ahead and do it. It would not affect the results. It would not result the optimality of the result. Okay, so let's do that. And again, let me squeeze them here. Okay. And we are going to combine, so we are going to combine these 4 and we are going to combine these 2.
Right.
So I'm going to replace 3 and 7
so it's x11.
By x11. And let me go ahead and write these.
We don't need the first one.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's true. So let's get rid of the first one. So, okay, we get to the first one. And then all of these we combine into one, so we have 1,
XX,
XX 1, 1X. So basically, now when you implement it, you have to choose this to be a 1 or 0. Except whatever you choose is not going to matter, but So you can go ahead and convert them to into zeros if that's what you like. Would not make a difference. These don't cares on this side. So don't cares here mean no connection. So here, the don't cares mean no connection. Don't cares on this side mean you can pick them to be either 0 or 1. So should we go ahead and draw a PLA for this too? Why not just go ahead and do it? Let's get A, B, and C. That is A, B. Oh, I need an inverted there. That is C. And the product terms, we have four of them. So 1, 0, 1, 1, 1. 1, 0. Oh, I'm sorry. 1, 0, 1. 1, 0, 1. And then 0, 1, 1. 0, 1, 1. And then 1, 1 don't care.
I don't think you have
no. No, I'm sorry.
Your first one should be 0, 0.
Let me start. I was looking at the wrong part of the table there. Okay. Okay, we actually have to perform the product terms. And the product terms are 0, 0, 1. Okay, sorry about that. 0, 0, 1. Okay. So 0, 0, 1. I was just checking to see if you guys are awake. Okay, and then we have 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, and then we have don't care 1, 1, then I have don't care 1, 1, and then I have 1. Don't care, don't care. So I've gotten now the product terms, right? And next thing we have to do is to do the OR part. So we use this here. So now we have a couple of product terms. So these are the product terms, four of them. And the outputs, we need the D. So D includes 1, 0, 1, 1. 1, 0, 1, 1. And the E is 0, 1, 1. 0, 1, 1, 1. And F is 1, 1, 1, 1. Don't care, don't care. How do we do a don't care here?
Doesn't matter.
Maybe we make them 0. If that's what we choose, right?
Keep it consistent.
So, I have chosen them to 0, but if you choose them to be 1, 1, that will also satisfy the specification. Any questions on this? Okay, so this is about minimization. Now actually, there are some nice minimization algorithms. There's a famous one, Quine-McCluskey minimization algorithm, that was developed many years ago for multiple output functions like this. And people have worked on these and refined these things. And it turns out that PLA minimization is a nice example of implementation of a minimization algorithm. Now later we will talk about benchmark programs. So when they check for a computer performance of processors, so they have taken programs from different types of problems that that do different type of things, and then they come up with a score. So some of the example programs that they have chosen in the past, they have been the PLA minimization program, because this represents a certain type of program. So there's no floating point operations involved here, but certain type of operations, certain type of loops and so on. Any questions on this? Okay, so let us next look at, now we have talked about gates, and sometimes, and we have looked at some functional blocks that which are made up of gates. For example, we talked about multiplexers, decoders, full adders. Now you can have arrays of logical elements. Now a lot of times when they design, let us say if you want to design a 64-bit arithmetic logic unit that can add 64 bits, or that can do some operation on 64 bits, the typical approach is they first design one stage of this 64 thing. So after they have designed one stage, then they replicate this block 64 times. Occasionally there's something special about the first one and the last one, but all others basically look identical, and they are put in form of an array which has a regular structure. So that is what the type of things. So there are sometimes you can put some logic elements in an array, and the array basically extend the functionality. It does the same operation, except the operands that it works on are now wider. So for example, let's see here, let's consider a multiplexer. Let's say that this is what you want to get. Now this is how multiplexers are drawn in our textbook. Here is a select line. And let's assume that this is a 32-bit multiplexer. And let us assume that two set of input lines are called A and B. And output, let's call that C, 32 bits. Now let us assume you want to implement this, and you want to use a few of these things. Now here you have 32 bits and here you have a single bit. And let's assume this is bit A31. And this is bit B31, and this is bit C subscript 31. That means it is the 32nd bit. If you start counting from zero, and here is the select line. Okay, how many of these things you will need to implement this? Obviously 32, right? So you take 32 of them. So here's the next one. I'm not going to draw 32, that would be rather cumbersome, but I guess I will give you an indication of how that would look like. And here's the select line, so let's have that come down like this, and okay, more like this, and let me get the very first one at the bottom, and that would be A0, B0, that's a mux, and here is the select line, and here is C0. So there we have an array of logical elements, and they are arranged in a way so that the whole array basically has the same functionality. So the whole array basically is still a multiplexer that selects one from two inputs, except that now the inputs are 32-bit wide and not 1-bit wide. And notice here what we did. We noticed that the data lines, we have kept them in parallel. So these are the data lines, and they are just in parallel. So instead of one line coming in, we now have 32. They're all coming in parallel. And what about the control lines? Now, what is a control line? The select line is regarded to be a control line because it controls which one goes through. So this controls whether this goes through or this goes through. So this is a control line. And for the control lines, and there's only one in this case. So we have basically control line is common. That means the same control line goes everywhere. So here's the select line, and the same one goes everywhere. So that means you either select the A's or you select the B's, which is, of course, what you want.
Any questions or comments on this? Now, another example, I think we perhaps saw this, a parallel binary error. We had seen that a while ago. And that is also an array of logical elements. We had seen that, let's say, if you have a, let's say, 4-bit error, you will start with this, and here is A0, and here is B0, and here is the carry in, let's call it C0, and the sum bit, let's call it S0, and here is the carry out going into the next one, and this is a A1, B1. Well, since this has a carry, and this is the carry out, so this is C1, this is C2, A2, B2, S1, this is S2. We have A3 and B3. We have S3 and carry out, which is the final carry out, which is C4. So here we have now, this is a parallel binary error. I think we called it by another name before, didn't we? Did we call it a ripple carry error? Mm-hmm. This also goes by the name ripple carry error because the carry, so this comes here, and this comes here, this comes here, this comes here. So the carry ripples through, so that's another name for it. Parallel binary, you know, the reason this is sometimes called a parallel binary error is that you can also have a serial error. So let's say if hardware were very expensive, you could have just one of these, and you can bring in successive bits one by one. So instead of adding 4 bits and 4 bits in parallel, you could first add the first pair of bits, add the next pair of bits, use the same one, and when the calculators first came out, hardware was still expensive, and they didn't have that much capability that they could put on a chip. So they used to do some serial addition. Some of the very early calculators they used what we would now call a serial binary error. But now hardware is much cheaper. Now I remember I bought my first digital calculator. How much did I pay for it? I paid $180. And it had an LED, you know, the shine. And of course it consumes more power. And so it was, and actually I had waited a year, or maybe it was a semester. So it was actually just a semester before, it was like $240. And of course the same thing, now that was a scientific, what is the cheapest scientific calculator costs now? $5-6 or so?
Yeah.
So you can buy a $5-6 one. So that if you lose it, you don't have to feel that bad. So hardware, of course, is much cheaper than it used to be. So that means you can throw some hardware at the design problems and make things faster. So there are basically a few approaches you can use to make things faster. One approach to make things faster is to use a better technology. But of course, there, at a certain point in time, you don't have too much choice because you have the technology that you have. And of course, the technology has progressed and clock frequency has gone up gradually. And now it is kind of hitting some limitations, which we will talk about later. And other way you can make things faster would be use more hardware, like here. We have four of them in parallel that process four pairs of bits at the same time. Now the same concept has been extended. For example, in couple of you have the dual core thing. So you have this core and this core, so let this core do something and this core, if there's work available. So both of them are working together, so you get more done. So that is one approach for getting higher performance. Do more things in parallel. And often that requires more hardware.
Is it true that with serial communication you can have higher clock speeds because of less interference between the wires or something like that? I thought that was what was behind serial ETA.
In general, actually your question is somewhat different. So you're talking about information being transmitted in serial versus information that may be transmitted in parallel.
I guess it's more of an easy question.
So there's a cost thing also. So if you have if you transmit things in parallel, then you have more connections. So in your PC, your printer, but like that time now it depends on how your printer is connected. So if you have one of those old how many of you have a printer connected to the parallel port? Don't have that anymore?
No.
Okay. So you have a USB thing, right?
Yes.
Which is serial. Okay, so it keeps getting back and forth. So thing is that with advancement of various things, even with a serial transmission, you can transmit things faster. But you will have to clock things at a faster rate. And of course, you have to have appropriate protection. That means some redundancy, so that if there's some error, that can be corrected. So serial would always be cheaper because we have fewer connections. And you can make it more reliable by adding some redundancy. So in parallel, what the one disadvantage is that it is it takes more number of wires. So if you have seen the old printer cable, which sometimes you have number of wires that go through it. So I guess it's a trade-off between cost and performance. And sometimes you can reduce the cost by coming up with a design that gives you the same performance with a single wire.
Any other questions or comments?
Now here, let me make some comments on this. You see some disadvantages with this design? Now one disadvantage you can clearly see that it, how many levels of logic this has. We haven't gotten around to doing a minimal design for a full adder, right? I think we haven't seen that yet. Let's make that homework. So, you want to do that at home? Okay, let's make that homework.
Are you going to post it?
The homework?
Are you going to add it to the homework that's posted?
Homework is not posted yet.
Or that will be posted today?
Yeah, the homework will be posted. Yeah, maybe I'll just, why don't I just add it to the homework?
I was going to say something. Yeah, so one disadvantage here is that information comes here. Let's assume this is two levels of logic. You can implement anything with two levels of logic, right? We have said that. So you have two levels, and of course here we have only four, but these days you could have something like that as 64-bit. So you're looking at 128 levels of logic. And that would really slow down the additions, because you cannot capture the output until everything has stabilized. You have to wait for signals to stabilize, and then you can latch the output. So this would not be a good design. And later on we will talk about how you can improve on these errors. Basically, you do something, some clever design, throw some hardware at the problem. Sometimes that helps. Throw some hardware at the problem and you can make it faster. And we will see later how we can do design using carry look-ahead generator that can make this process much faster. But we will see that next time. Any questions? Okay, so we will continue next time. Yeah.